Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Joining me in studio right now from the Portage Health Foundation, Kevin Storr and Chelsea Goodrow. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Now, I thought this would be a good opportunity, as you know, we're in the middle of the holiday season, for one, to talk about, you know, Giving Tuesday coming up. Everybody knows about Black Friday. Everybody knows about Cyber Monday. But Giving Tuesday is also really catching on, where people think about, well, maybe, you know, instead of spending all that money at the store, see what else that you can be able to do some good, you know, especially in our local area. And so Chelsea, in a moment, will give us an update on how you're able to support local organizations. Right now, we'll talk to Kevin, and we'll talk about the Flood with Love initiative. And unless you've been on another planet, you know that, you know, we were hit with some pretty devastating floods this year, particularly on the Father's Day weekend. And the recovery effort has been, you know, ongoing, and you know, it's, in some cases, it's, you know, still on, you know, continuing as we're trying to help people recover. So Portage Health Foundation saw this need to come out and put together a way not only to collect donations, but to be able to distribute this to the people in need in a way that was monitored, fair, and would protect the people both giving and those that were receiving money. So let's start with you, walk me through how the process worked and where we're at today.
Well, where we're at first, I guess, where we're at today is, you know, we're pretty proud to say that of the 487 applicants that we had, the different properties that we had apply for relief funding, that we are nearly closing all of those and have met the needs that they've applied for in most cases. Backing up a little bit further to give a little bit more of an update on how this came about, you know, in that very first week, we, you know, our board of directors made, took the information that we were getting from the emergency response team and more importantly, took the information that we were getting from homeowners directly and really assessed what those needs were going to look like, and we made some projections on how we were going to, as a foundation, come and provide some aid. And using those original projections from the state emergencies report, you know, we had anticipated well over 600 homes that we would likely be providing some relief for. And as I mentioned just now, we had actually 487 applications for flood relief funding from us. Of those, as you kind of filter through, you know, we had some applications that were rental properties that, after legal opinion, we were not able to support those properties. We had our board had made a decision that we weren't going to be looking at secondary vacation homes. And it's not that we don't recognize the damages to those homes, but we were looking at how this aid that we had would go back into primary residences and get those folks, from a triaging standpoint, you know, to get people back into their residence as quickly as possible. So all said and done, we ended up with about 420 eligible applications that we worked through. And, you know, when this is all wrapped up, I'm kind of jumping around a little bit here, but we will have a final report. We will have an audited report that will outline all of the monies that were received as well as those monies that were expended. And that's just another effort, a part of our effort to be transparent, not only to the community that we've helped, but also to our donor community, to reassure them that the monies that they donated have been expended as intended, and we did as promised, and we put those monies, 100% of those funds, right back into the homes that were damaged by the flood. So where we're at today, through this process, I can tell you that the last 5 months have been a long 5 months, not only for, certainly for the people that were directly impacted by the flood, but it's been a busy summer for us in the office. So keep in mind, I mean, we're doing this with an office staff of four and a collective partnership with a lot of contractors from our community. But that the work that we've done has included everything from, you know, some basic clean out and mold mitigation, you know, furnace and boiler replacement, water heater replacements, servicing of all those mechanical units, electrical panel replacements, foundation repairs and stabilization, so in some cases completely rebuilding of foundations. We have worked on, you know, all the exterior mitigation that you can imagine. We had a lot of homes that were just overrun with silt. I mean, when you're talking 4 feet of boulders and compacted mud that is now almost like concrete, in some cases having to be hammered out of there. It's not something that you can clean up as a homeowner with a wheelbarrow and a shovel.
Sure.
Most recently, we just nearly completed Ripley cleanup. We had a contractor go in and get all of the remaining sand and boulders and whatnot hauled out of that area of Ripley that was damaged. That was all done by the Portage Health Foundation. We had complete neighborhoods in Lake Linden, Tamarack City, Hubble that, you know, recognizing that the municipalities have limited funds, we had to go in, and in order to stabilize those locations for the homeowners, we had to hire contractors to go in and clean them up and reestablish those neighborhoods in some cases. And then, obviously, the homes that were completely destroyed, as I've reported in the past, we worked with those homeowners and their lending institutions to identify, you know, a workable plan for those homeowners to either... we had one homeowner that was we were able to rebuild, and we've had other homeowners that we've had to relocate. But you know that you know we've been working through that process with those homeowners, and those that aren't in a home yet are not in their permanent home. You know, like the Markham family, they're working on it. All the others we've been able to relocate and or find alternatives for. So it's been it's been an emotional summer for everybody, certainly for all of us at the foundation, just because we know that our response, seemingly quick when you look at it from an outside perspective in, but we also know that the response that we did, there was a lot of homeowners that needed it to be quicker, and you know we did the best that we could.
It's a monumental task to take on. What was the, I guess, the reasoning for establishing this sort of response system that didn't already exist, instead of maybe partnering or funneling the money towards another organization like United Way or somewhere, you know, the American Red Cross for donations like that?
You know, the establishment of the fund happened Monday, immediately following the flood. And it came out at the emergency coordination meeting. There was a need to have a local depository for those funds coming in, and we had people that were calling from outside the community that wanted to have a way to ensure that the monies that they were donating were going to stay in this community. And I say this not in any condemnation of any of the other relief organizations like the United Way or Salvation Army or any, you know, Red Cross or anybody else. Everybody played a role, especially in the first couple of weeks, but you know, what we did is by establishing that local fund, and we have, as of to date, have raised just over $675,000 in corporate and private donations. You know, 100%. There are no service fees. There were no administrative fees. There were no handling fees of any of that money. 100% of those monies went right back into the homes. And I don't know of any other organization that could have pledged that. And not only pledged that 100% of those monies would stay in the community, but to pledge that 100% of those monies would go right back into those homes. And for us as a foundation, you know, you mentioned, you know, how did this decision come to be? It really wasn't much of a decision for us. And looking back, maybe it should have been. But it really came about because we knew from the very first couple of days of the meetings that, you know, and rightly so, that the municipalities and the emergency response, they're going to be focusing on getting infrastructure and utilities back in place. That's what they do. That's what FEMA does, is they focus on those types of, you know, public infrastructure. And it became immediately apparent to us that there was not going to be any aid for the private homeowners, and especially with the absence of any flood insurance, that the damages were going to be largely on the backs of the people in our community. And how do you reconcile that and not do something? So for us, it was a simple decision. The thing that was a little bit more complex is, how do we do something about this? And I'm pretty proud of our organization and the way that we took in a lot of information. You know, we had both praise and criticism. You know, praise that we moved along quickly, and we also had some criticism that we were moving along quickly. And there were some that said, you know, we did this, you know, somewhat autonomously, and that wasn't the case. You know, we had meetings with all of the other types of relief organizations that you've mentioned and more. tried to identify what they could bring to the table and what they couldn't, tried to understand how people would navigate their system for aid, in order for us to better position our aid. And, you know, we came in and said, this is what we can do, and how do we use this to complement other organizations? But we also recognize that we had a very short window. I mean, this flood happened in June. But if you look and if you know anything about construction and know anything about the work that our contractors were already engaged in, thankfully they were busy this summer under normal conditions, you know, to look at this and say we have a four-month window to actually get something done, we had to take action immediately. There wasn't an opportunity to sit around, because if we would have waited, or we would have, you know, went into this and said, well, we need to have all these answers before we can move on, we would be sitting here right now and there'd be a lot of people without heat and water in their homes. There'd be a lot of people that would still not be in their homes. And I say that because, you know, again, our foundation, the Portage Health Foundation, made a decision. We took action that was coordinated with the emergency team and all the other organizations. But again, and most importantly, was coordinated with our families and our community. And, you know, that's what we did.
With such a small staff and, you know, limited, outside of money, but limited resources as far as getting, you know, the controlling the process of this, you had to go through all of those applications, make those determinations, and then verify the contractors and that the work is getting done, that the money's not being wasted. How did you manage all of that with such a large amount of money coming through and so many different work projects going on?
It probably helps that we're all a little crazy in the office to begin with. A lot of hours. Everybody, all the folks in the office put in a lot of time this summer. You know, what it came down to is it was very much very personal and in hand. I'm not a licensed contractor, but I've been around construction my whole life. So that skill set has allowed me individually to go out and meet with all of the applicants that we had, unless they were just purely you know, either they were dismissed and not eligible. But those 420 applications that I talk about, I went to every one of those homes and met with the homeowners and had them walk me through their damages. And I was able to work with the homeowners to help them understand what we could and could not cover. But more importantly, what type of work was going to be needed in order for me to do essentially a scope of work order that I could then bring to the contractors and say, here's what we're looking at. These are the things that are obvious. We need you to go in and look at these things, give us a price, and then go in and have a work plan to get that home done. So it's a little bit of an interesting story to help illustrate this. I was in Lake Linden, and I had this gentleman. I mean, I'm working with a particular homeowner, and this gentleman comes out, and I'm not going to mention any names here, but you know, he's kind of cussing me out from about a block away. And I looked over, and I told the homeowner I was with, I said, excuse me for a second. So I went down, and I said, you know, for just lack of a name, I'll call him Toivo. I said, Toivo, you know, what can I help you with? He goes, and he's basically cussing me out. And he said, you know, you're supposed to be here, you know, back here 2 weeks ago. I haven't heard back from you. And I said, I'm standing right here. I'm right in your neighborhood. You've seen me working through this neighborhood and this corridor for the last week and a half, 2 weeks. And he goes, what, are you the only one? And yeah, I am. I'm the only one that's in our office. I'm the only one. Who else do you see out here that is doing this? Who else do you see that's coming and taking the time and going into your home and working with you? So, you know, I think there's a lot of things that the community doesn't understand about this. This wasn't grant money. This wasn't state money. This wasn't federal money coming from FEMA. This wasn't, you know, we didn't have an office that this is our normal course of business. You know, we coordinated a plan. We worked with our contractors, and we took the time to go out to every one of those homes and do our best to help as many people as we could. And that was our mantra from the beginning, was to do the most good for the most people with the limits of our resources that we could. And that's what drove this whole process.
Well, let me ask you something, Kevin, because you had mentioned that you received both praise and criticism during this whole process. Do you feel that the Portage Health Foundation and the work that the few of you have done, do you feel that you've gotten the appreciation that you've earned?
You know, that wasn't what we were looking for, really. We didn't have any expectation on that. That wasn't why we did this. We weren't out there looking for praise on this. We were looking to make sure that we were helping our community. And I will tell you that about 99% of the people were fantastic. Very gracious, very understanding, you know, very appreciative. We had about a dozen folks that made it really difficult. And you know, that's just human nature, and that's a sociology experiment in and of itself. But at the end of the day, we know that we did what we could. We're going to continue to do so with the cases that we have yet to finish and finalize. I just had a gentleman today where you know, he's been without water since the flood, and got a call today that the contractors that we've hired to, you know, and it's been a process to get that particular case remedied. And I think that's another point, is that every house and every homeowner, their needs were very different. You know, you could be right next door in a typical neighborhood, your neighbor 10 feet away, same flood, same level of water, but because of the damage was different, the home was different, you know, the income levels in the home were different, the debt-to-income ratios were different, their ability to work with creditors were different, everything about it was different. And we had to navigate all of those different facets of that particular homeowner's issue in order to help us come to a remedy. And, you know, back to your point, you know, we did that because we knew that this was what was going to be needed to help our community heal. And, you know, the chips will fall where they may. And we're just glad that we were able to be in a position to do this, because what if we weren't here and we weren't able to do this?
Well, exactly. And that's part of my point is, you know, hopefully that something down the road, if not done already in process, the community finds a way to, you know, show their appreciation, because you do. I know you're saying, and that's what you should be saying, is that, you know, that's not what's important. You know, and I could say, you know, thank you so much, but I'm just one person. And where this community would be without the efforts of the Portichello Foundation, certainly nowhere near as rebounded as we have been. So, you know, you are, you know, this work by all of you is definitely appreciated. And hopefully, you know, as a community, we find a way to, you know, I guess just celebrate the kinds of people that we have here in this area that are able to do this and come together and pull this off.
That's one of the things that we're trying to also do, is to document a little bit about the storm and its impact on the homeowners and our takeaways from this. Because I can tell you that there are a lot of takeaways from this that will influence our decisions and direction as a foundation, just because of the interactions that I've had and looking at some of the conditions that some of our families are living in. It just reaffirms some of the things that we're already on track with our mental behavioral health services. You know, we couldn't have, and I want to say we couldn't have done this without the partners that we had. We had some contractors that really stepped up. We had, you know, in the first couple of days, you know, dial help, you know, do what you need to do. We'll work together and we'll make this happen. And I think one other point I want to make is, I've had some people say, well, you know, you're typically a health foundation and this is outside of your scope in terms of funds. And you know, that's not the case either, because, you know, some people would say, well, why is that water heater or that furnace or that new boiler and that electrical panel necessary to put in at home? Well, you could see that, you know, some people look at that's a mechanical issue. And I look at that, no, that's the 82-year-old lady that's living in that home. And if we didn't do that, what is she going to do this winter? She's going to just sit there and wrap up in an electric blanket when she herself doesn't make $10,000 a year, you know, and, you know, so I look at these things, and we looked at this very, very much in the beginning, is this is as much about a public health issue as it is about, you know, flood recovery. You know, the debris that was, you know, in people's yards and the soil and the increase in respiratory illness and skin irritants and all the other things that we saw this summer, you know, from the construction and the flood and all the damage, the emotional trauma that was caused by the flood for families, that's very much a public health issue. And that's very much in our pipeline and a part of why we felt that we could use this, and certainly why we had the Attorney General's full support on our plan and how we did it. And, you know, we're proud of that, and we'll defend that decision because it was the right thing to do for this community.
Because with so much money going to support this effort, you know, I've heard about from other organizations that have taken a little bit of hit when it comes to receiving donations over the last six months. And so now we kind of have an opportunity coming up here at least a day to bring awareness that there are a lot of other organizations who are doing great work, especially, you know, right here in our own area, that we can support through Giving Tuesday. And Chelsea, I'm sorry to, you know, we've had you on standby here this whole time, but tell me a little bit about Giving Tuesday and why Portage Health Foundation takes part in it.
Sure. Giving Tuesday has become a global day of giving. It's a way to really raise awareness and kind of generate a philanthropic spirit amongst the holiday season, because I think everybody has a tendency to really get wrapped up in, you know, Black Friday shopping and all the sales coming up for Christmas. So it's just kind of a refreshing day to kind of readjust where our focus is. For the Portage Health Foundation, I think it was a really natural fit. As we've grown as an organization, we've evolved past being just a funding agency. You know, we've really taken a different look at how are we advocating for people? How are we striving for collaboration? How are we being a mouthpiece for the nonprofit partners that we work with? And so Giving Tuesday has really just been a natural fit, and it helps that our board really has a heart for our nonprofits, and so they really believe in the work that we're doing, but as well as Giving Tuesday. So it's just been a, like I said, it's just been a natural fit for the foundation to participate.
What are some uses that the money that would be donated, what would it be put to use for?
Sure. So last year, it was really cool when we went out and delivered checks. We were able to kind of get some insight into where the money was going. And I think that's something that I really want to emphasize for people who are listening, is that the money that you donate is making an impact. So just a few examples. So Dial Help is a crisis line. They have a whole laundry list of excellent programs that they provide, but one of their hub programming is their crisis line, and you can text, instant message, call. And so their phone systems were struggling, and so the donations that they received last year, they were able to put in a new reliable system. And so just looking at the value of that program and, you know, being able to maintain that and get some technology in that is more reliable was huge for them. Another example is Omega House. The money that was donated last year was able to support their food bill for their clients for 14 months. So you look at, if that money is redistributed, what other programs are they able to implement as an organization to be able to better support the families in the community and the clients that they have living with them. Another one was Sky, so Simple Kindness for Youth. So what they do is they support youth in the community on many different levels. So education, sometimes they need stipends for field trips, or they need clothing or food. So they support our youth in a really broad way. And so they were able to expand their programming and support, I believe it was 12 or 18 more young people last year because of the funding that came in from Giving Tuesday. So it's just really cool to see that the money is at work and it's making an impact.
Yeah, I love that the three examples that you gave are all local homegrown organizations that, you know, they don't have, you know, a huge budget being, you know, coming from state or federal governments. They're, you know, organizations that we support here, and all of their activity, you know, remains here as well. So that's great. How does somebody actually give to the Portage Health Foundation for Giving Tuesday?
In order to maintain good records, we are saying that people need to donate to us in order for the match to be good.
Oh, a match?
Yes. So the Portage Health Foundation is actually matching up to $100,000 of community donations. So last year we did 50, and our board was really excited about the results of last year. We ended up raising $52,000 and change in community donations. So it was over $100,000. Wow. That was given out last year. So matching up to $100,000 in total donations.
I had to interrupt for that. Sorry.
That was
pretty awesome. So again, how do you donate? So you want people to donate directly to you? Do you do that online, or you drop things off?
So there's different ways that people can donate. They can go online to our website at our donation page, and we just ask that that there is a comment box. So we want to make sure that the money is going exactly where you want it to. So make a note of what organization or organizations that you're wanting to donate. Last year, we had people who donated multiple times because of multiple organizations. So this year, we're just asking that people come in and they just use one donation form and a lump sum and then identify how much money you want to go to each organization. For people who want to send in a check, they're more than able to do that, or cash. On the memo line of the check, just write which organization or organizations you want it to go to. And then with cash, just insert a little note there for us so we know where your money's going.
And all can be claimed for tax deductible reasons for your upcoming taxes.
Yes. So Connie is sending out tax letters and trying to stay on top of that. So, yep, this is tax deductible.
PHFGives.org?
PHFGive.org.
PHFGive.org.
Yes.
Great. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in. I hope people participate with Giving Tuesday. We certainly learned a lot about what the Portichello Foundation is doing and what, of course, they have done for everybody that was involved with the flood for our entire community. And once again, Kevin and Chelsea, thank you for your efforts and all that you did with the Flood with Love Initiative and all the other programs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.